From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on a recent conversation on Connections about body mass index, or BMI. We were moved by numerous emails from listeners who shared stories of being shamed, sometimes by their own doctors, about their weight. Some told us that they stopped going to the medical setting entirely, stopped going to see the doctor, stopped going for checkups, because they feared what the interactions would be like. Now, I should say, this also sparked some questions from listeners, and it got rather blunt at times. One listener asked, if your own doctor can't order you to lose weight, who can? But the health professionals we've spoken to tell us it's more complicated than that. Obsessing about weight alone is not the right way to handle your health, and there are more effective ways to communicate, and sometimes to communicate directly. This hour, we re-engaged the discussion to focus on how health professionals can improve their communication with patients, what improved communication might mean for patients, and frankly, what we as patients should expect of ourselves and of the medical profession, those we go to for guidance, whether it's dietitians, doctors, nurses, and more. Our guests this hour include Dr. Holly Russell, Medical Director of Clinical and Community-Based Programs at the Center for Community Health and Prevention at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Dr. Russell, thanks for coming back to the program.
Thank you for having me again. I'm happy to be here.
And we welcome back Jill Chodak, who's a clinical dietitian at the Center for Community Health and Prevention at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Jill, welcome back as well.
Thank you for having me.
Donna Burnett is a mother, wife, and professional. Donna, thanks for making time for the program. How are you?
I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Well, and we wanted to invite Donna to sort of share not only a personal story, but offer some insight into how these interactions might take place in the future. So, Donna, I kind of want to give you the floor and just let you know that we'd love to hear your story. Go ahead.
Oh, excellent. Again, thanks for having me and giving me this platform to speak. I have had the privilege of speaking on several occasions, thanks to Dr. Russell's invitation to medical school residents and fellows about weight bias in medicine. I do think, I'll say from the start, that the weight bias in medicine is an extension of weight bias in society, and they can't be disconnected. I do think that it's especially powerful and painful because we privilege medical knowledge. And when we go to the doctor, most oftentimes we're sick and we're looking for help. And it's scary. It's humiliating. It makes you feel invisible and completely visible at the same time. So I guess my story is that I am in my mid-40s now. I am 400 pounds, just so you know. We're on the radio, so it's hard to see. I'm a white female. I'm a mother of two young daughters. And I am highly educated. I have a very professional job in the community. So I think that my journey is a little bit different because I feel very, I exercise my privilege of my race, I'm going to be honest, my education to advocate for myself in the medical settings. I've come to learn how to advocate for myself, and I know that many people can't. So my invitation from Dr. Russell came about because once when I was meeting with her in a regular doctor's appointment, I thanked her for not just looking at me only as my weight and for treating me holistically, you know, asking all the questions about all the other parts of my life to get to the crux of what was wrong medically. And that's when we got talking about these issues. But so I grew up, I've always been overweight. I've always been a fat person. I grew up in Rochester, lifelong Rochester resident. And in my 20s and in my 30s, that's when I really got angry. And, you know, you go from being picked on and ostracized as a kid to figuring out, okay, this is actually who I am now. My identity is really shaped by my weight. And I'm kind of done with this. I'm done with the societal pressures at all ends. Then I got involved more with fat activism, you know, reclaiming the word fat versus using obesity, which is more of a medical term. And then I actually worked through all of that and was going around my life. And I decided at the same time, it was complicated, right? So I'm in this large body. My highest weight, I weighed 450 pounds. I was not in a good place mentally. Health-wise, I knew I wanted to have children. And so I actually pursued gastric bypass. So this is a controversial thing, especially in the fat activism community. But I got there after a lot of mental health work. So I did work about what I wanted my life to be and what I thought was the best choice for me. And I decided ultimately that I wanted to bear children. And that was going to be a good choice for me on my own to make to empower my life, to get my levels at the place they had to be so that I could be a mother someday. So then you get looked at as a person who was fat, a person who had gastric bypass and lost a lot of weight. You have a judgment based on that. You feel incredibly under the microscope because the people who know you have that surgery want to see what the outcome is. And they have comments on it. And then the result was I did make a good decision for me, but it changed me completely. It changed me completely, not in the weight loss, but in that I was empowered to make a decision for my health on my own. And after that, you know, my own mother said, well, was this really successful? Because now 10 years out, your weight's back up. I still think it was incredibly successful because it was a complete change in attitude. I started to advocate for myself left and right. Now I look in when I'm at work. If there's a chair that doesn't fit me, I will go get one that does. And I don't apologize. I just take up the space that I need. So I think my point here is that it's complicated. It's a long process. It's a lifelong process, and we cannot separate the fact that everyone looks at us from the time we're born and has a comment or thought based on our weight. When we go in the doctor's office, it's going to be even more so.
Oh, wow. I'm grateful that you're telling the story, Donna, and I really appreciate it. So I want to ask you a few things about some of the story that you have laid out for us, and then we'll talk about interactions with health professionals, and you know maybe your view on how those have gone, what a better interaction might look like. Now, when you say that in your 20s and 30s, you know you had sort of a view that well this is who I am and you endured a lot of picking on, mocking, shaming. What is the worst of it? I mean, how did it hit you on the mental health side?
The mental health side is that you don't, I can only speak for myself, but I didn't feel like I was worthy of being in a relationship, a romantic relationship. That was a big thing. 20s and 30s, a lot of people are out there looking for their partner. And I was just like everybody else. So I didn't feel like I was worthy of that. I was a complete overachiever in my professional life. So in order to feel valued, I felt that I needed to do more and better than other people in the room. You know, we see a lot of this in gender politics and racial politics. About people having to overachieve to compensate for the preconceptions that the people around them see. So I definitely flourished in that. I learned to be incredibly polite and incredibly funny to find my space in those niches. But in doing so, it really erased me as a whole person. And I felt very isolated and alone and like I had to be happy with what I got from friendships and romantic relationships and even in family relationships.
We, as I noted, we got some emails from listeners who shared some very moving personal stories about their own experiences. And one of the common threads I'm hearing from people who are, I guess, overweight, I want to use the terminology that you think is fair and correct, Donna, and I appreciate that. I'm going to be a little clumsy here, and I apologize.
It's okay.
but so one of the things that listeners expressed was a stigma that because of their weight, they were just a lazy person. You were someone who was an overachiever at work, and as you mentioned now, some of that was driven by, you know, sort of a lack of balance in your life or sort of a compensation dealing with certain aspects that were difficult for you, but you were not a lazy person. Is that a stigma that you think people who are overweight deal with a lot?
Absolutely. Absolutely. When you walk into a job, every time I go to a job interview, I think about immediately, how am I going to compensate for the perceptions they're going to make, the meanings they're going to draw by just looking at me, by just me taking up space as I walk in. And that's when the way I compensate for that is by, you know, bringing out the resume of all the achievements I've had, almost in spite of the judgments that society has had about me, you know. So it's absolutely true. You're judged as lazy all the time. You're judged as unkempt. Like you can't, your life is not together. You're not in control of things. And it's completely untrue. Weight is just one aspect of who we are, who all of us are. And it isn't a direct measurement of health. It isn't a direct measurement of worth. We are so much more. And it's, I think that we're not raised to understand that, right? We don't work with our kids, or at least in the time I grew up in the 80s, we weren't talking about this kind of stuff. Instead, we were sent out into the world just to observe social interactions and do the best we can. And I don't blame my parents and teachers. I just think that's where we are. But we aren't taught that you can, yes, I might be fat, and that's not a bad thing. That's just one aspect about me. I also have brown hair, also not a bad thing.
Okay. Now, do you have, did you go through your 20s and 30s, and did you have goals for yourself, for your health? And I'm not just talking about weight. I mean, you talked about a decision that you made that you wanted to bear children. You wanted to take the steps necessary to get to that point where you could do that. Mm-hmm. But did you have other goals, and have those goals evolved?
Yeah, so I did. I think at a certain point I gave up. So I just completely saw myself as an outsider from, you know, the folks that were going to go hiking and running and all that different stuff, right? Because there wasn't a space for me. There wasn't yoga for all bodies like there is right now. There weren't fitness centers that catered to people with different, that were inclusive, like we see popping up now. So I saw myself completely as an outsider for physical activity opportunities. I really focused my personal goals were on professional achievement instead of physical health. I let that slide because honestly, I was terrified to try to be part of any of those groups. I was terrified to go to the doctor because the doctor automatically would just say, you know, you have to lose a lot of weight. And, you know, having someone tell you have to lose 150 pounds before you can do something or be healthy or happy is just like, it's insurmountable. And framing your life that way, it's like putting a ball and chain on your foot and saying, okay, go run. It's not going to happen.
Did you at any point, though, try to lose weight or want to do it in your 20s and 30s?
I did.
Yeah? Yeah?
I did. I've done all the different programs, and starting in middle school, I've done all the programs. I did them with my mother when I was in undergraduate. When I was an undergraduate student, I decided for a while that I wanted to be a doctor. So I thought, you know, I better lose all this weight. So because if I'm not embodying this vision of a healthy body, then how will anybody ever listen to me? So I actually did one of the liquid diets that summer, mm-hmm. which did not have a positive outcome. So yeah, I've done all of the weight loss plans that you can think of.
In a moment, I'll ask Jill about the various fad diets that are out there that, you know, mm-hmm. people of all backgrounds and weights have probably encountered. And I'm sure, you know, Donna, that, you know, those get pushed on people. Do this, try this, liquid diet, this or that. Today and really throughout your adulthood, how do you view Everybody's got a different relationship with food. How do you view food? How do you view, you know, sort of your relationship with it?
So my relationship with food has definitely evolved. I did a lot. I've done a ton of mental health work and behavioral work with food. And I did that before, during, and after my decision to get gastric bypass, where I looked at mindfulness in eating. So really thinking about how is what I'm putting in my body impacting me? Is this something that I'm enjoying? Am I just putting it in here for fuel? Am I doing this because I'm sad and I want a friend and this cookie is my friend tonight? You know, thinking about that, that's where my food relationship has gone. And it also now impacts how we're raising our children. My husband is also overweight. So we really are trying to be conscious of teaching our kids good eating habits. By good, I mean nutritious eating habits, and to acknowledge things like when they're full, et cetera, healthy. We get them active all the time to keep them going, because we want to give them all the tools that they need to find their own health, right? Mm-hmm. So theirs is not going to be the same as ours, but we talk about it.
Okay. And it sounds like you're comfortable talking about it.
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that's important and empowering. A couple more questions for you, and then I want to bring in our other guests to kind of talk about a wide range of issues here as we think about communication, as we think about health overall, goals, happiness. I mean, there's so much in play here. Donna, you said that you want to reclaim the word fat. Tell me more about that.
Well, for me, I use the word. It makes people uncomfortable. But I use the word because it needs a word. I am not just the obesity term, which I get when I step on the scale first thing in the doctor's office. I am my size, my body has meaning outside of the doctor's office. It has meaning historically. It has meaning culturally. It has meaning in my personal life. It is both my joy and my sorrow. So to me, I use the word fat to encompass all of that because it's more than just the medical setting.
But to you, it's a word that is descriptive, but not one that should carry shame?
It should not carry shame. Mm-hmm. It carries shame, but it also carries, like I said, that joy, that spirit. It's a part of my identity. It's been with me for so long. And it's not a bad part of my identity. It's just another factor of me. It's my spirit, my humor, my fat, all of those things make me who I am. My giant heart, the gifts I give to the world, my parenting, you know, I am all of those things. Mm-hmm. Fat is one.
And you said that gastric bypass can be controversial to some.
Mm-hmm.
I want to tell you what I assumed, and you can tell me if that's correct. My assumption when you said that is that for those who want to reclaim the word fat, not just take it away, not just let it be a slur or a pejorative, but for it to be all the things you just described, I assume what you mean is there's a view that gastric bypass is a way of saying I'm not comfortable with who I am and I don't want to be who I am. But I don't know that, I mean, that's what you meant. Can you explain?
Yeah, I think that's one of the part of that. I think it's whenever you impose a medical fix, a medical treatment to something, you're by default saying that your original state is problematic, right? So whenever you're saying, you know, I'm going to go cut myself and do this extreme surgery to lose weight, you're saying that it was your original state was so bad, your fatness was so bad that it necessitated that. And I personally think it's much more complicated. I get it that fat folks are thinking to themselves, how could we be in a place where, like, butchering our bodies, they might see it as butchering, is the solution and is the popular solution. And another problem is that we have all of this public perception problems, right? We have this media representation of the two pictures next to each other, the pre picture with a fat person who's had a bad life, and then the post picture where they're super skinny, they just got married and had a baby because their life is perfect because they had gastric bypass. I mean, all of that is what makes it problematic. It's not just the surgery. It's the context around it.
Okay. I certainly take that point. Now, when you hear from, say, family members or friends, there's or even doctors or nurses, there is obviously a difference between someone who wants to shame, mock, belittle someone because of their weight compared to someone who might say, Donna, I love you. I want you to live a long life. I'm worried about you. Is there a different way forward here? If I'm sure you've heard it all, but on the latter, if you hear that today, what is your response?
I think for me, I'm pretty open. I've gotten to the point in my life where I'm very open in talking about these issues. So for me, it's talking about weight and concerns about weight and health go hand in hand with talking about all the other aspects of health. For example, I have a long history of depression and anxiety, and I think that they're connected with each other. So to me, a person that I'm close enough to who would talk to me about that would be talking about other things as well. I think that I've had to really take the lead with setting the tone of what's going to be a productive conversation versus just a shutdown. Because if someone isn't going to see me holistically, that I love, a friend or family member, then I need to, if I want to maintain that relationship, I need to have the conversation to reshape that communication.
Okay. Did you mention Dr. Russell is your doctor?
She used to be, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, it's helpful to know. So Dr. Holly Russell, Medical Director of Clinical and Community-Based Programs at the Center for Community Health and Prevention at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Dr. Russell, you know, Donna had some really, I think, grateful and kind things to say about the interaction she has had with you. And I'm sure it's not the case with all doctors. How do you approach working with patients who have obesity, with patients who are diagnosed as overweight? And can you kind of take me through your approach there?
Sure. Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, some of it is, I think my philosophy that we talked about last time is very much about health as opposed to weight. And so I think that's one of the things, you know, some of it is just luck probably that, you know, I think sometimes it's just it is a little bit clumsy, as you mentioned, to talk about some of this stuff. And maybe she caught me on a good day, but I do think a lot of it, I do think a lot of it is, you know, what's the focus of the conversation? And so I really, really try to set health goals with patients and not weight goals with patients. It is quite complicated though, because, you know, as Donna mentioned, it's in our society, the weight is the thing, right? And so many patients will come with wanting to set weight goals. And so having to have that conversation is complicated, I think. And you want to honor the patient's goals, but also kind of frame the conversation in a way that I think the evidence, you know, leads us towards, which is much more around, are you getting, you know, regular physical activity? Are you eating fruits and vegetables? That kind of thing, which we have much clearer evidence about the importance of.
Okay. And again, you know, I'll just say I'm going to ask some clumsy questions this hour, but I think it's important that we have these conversations openly. And frankly, I think Donna Burnett is just modeling how to do that. And I'm learning by the minute here, Donna, so I'm grateful for that. You know, so Dr. Russell, do you find it your responsibility to ascertain what the patient wants and help them get there, or to ascertain what you think is in their best interest for their health and try to get them to go in that direction?
Wow, that is a really good question. I mean, I think it's somewhere in the middle. You know, I think interestingly at the beginning, I heard you say something about, you know, doctors, or I think
a listener had written in about if a doctor can't order a patient yep. to lose weight, who can? I mean, I was very taken aback by that language because I don't think our job as doctors is ever to order a patient to do anything. And I think certainly if you look at like the literature around motivation, ordering people to do stuff is the opposite of what gets them to actually, you know, make changes. But I think it lies somewhere in the middle. I think my job is to share what the evidence is, you know, and my interpretation of kind of what the evidence around this is that we've studied weight loss for decades and decades and it hasn't gotten us anywhere. But we do know very clearly that people who move live longer, you know, people who move their bodies regularly and the value of fiber and the value of fruits and vegetables. And so I think my job is to share that information and then kind of figure out with a patient what they want to do with that information.
Okay. Donna, does that work for you?
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm
going to pay her after the show, you know.
on the subject of how you approach the relationship with food, Jill Chodak is a clinical dietitian at the Center for Community Health and Prevention. And, you know, the last time you were on this program, Jill, you talked about how difficult it can be, how some of your patients can shut down at times over the mental health challenge of, you know, whether it's what society's telling them they have to do, their self-image being impacted, an obsession with BMI or weight, raw weight numbers. How do you generally navigate conversations with patients who come in? They may have obesity, but they haven't articulated a direct goal. How do you work with them to find goals or find a path forward?
Excellent question. And Donna, I so appreciate your story. Thank you. Thank you so much. So how I approach it is complex. And frankly, I could talk for hours about this because I think it's that important. But where I start to think about it, talk about it, is ultimately my role as a dietitian, which is I am there to serve the patient. And I think the word serve is the most important word that I use on a daily basis. If I view myself as anything other than a servant to this patient, then it affects how I might treat them or interact with them. So every day I start my day by thinking, how can I best serve this human being who is arriving at my clinic with X, Y, and Z things they might want to work on? Because I'm a human too, right? An eater. I like chicken wings. I'm from Buffalo. I watch the Bills, right? So I have all these things myself. And so as a human being, I approach another human being with an attitude of empathy and service. And that dictates everything that goes on in that appointment. And from there, when a patient comes, and it's kind of helpful, although not helpful now with the telehealth realm, is like I'm not seeing the patient, right? So any judgments that may have popped up, which I don't have, but if they were to, are gone because I'm seeing their face or what they choose to show me. And so that kind of is nice because depending on the patient's vulnerability or kind of own comfort level, they can show me a piece of what they want to show me, right? So some people do it in their kitchen and they want to break out all their supplements and some people don't. But it allows kind of this even playing field, comfort filled zone where then I can say, hi, like what can I help you with today? And often patients are taken aback because, you know, the inclination is, well, my doctor sent me here for weight loss, which is what happens a lot of the time, which is totally cool. I hear the doctors. I love interacting collaboratively with doctors. And I also want to know, okay, you might have talked about that. Is that what you want to work on? Or is there something else that mm-hmm. you have that you want to talk about first? Because I can go on and on about the research about weight loss and this and that. But if it's not what you want to work on, why would I waste either of our time talking about it? Mm-hmm. Because no change will come unless the person who would make the change wants to.
And when it comes then to the different mechanisms that society thrusts at different people, let me read two things. I want to go back to what Donna said about the idea that we'll just go on a liquid diet. I mean, I'm sure there's all kinds of fad diets. On Twitter, Transer says, grateful to WXXI Connections for this discussion. We need way more public discussion around this, and we need to burn the whole diet industry to the ground. That's blunt. But so there's that. But on the subject of fad diets and the diet industry, you know, Donna was told we'll do a liquid diet. And I'm sure there's all kinds of myriad other diets. Is there any fad diet, Jill, that you kind of go back to and say, well, this one really is good?
Oh, having been on your show talking about other fad diets. Okay, so it depends on what you classify as fad diet, right?
Fair.
So when I think fad diet, I think trendy, maybe not as fully researched or studied, and maybe popular because a celebrity did it mm-hmm. or somebody had mm-hmm. great success. So that's what I think of when I think of fad diet. That said, I will answer your question, which is I would say the Mediterranean diet has always been kind of at the top of the list as far as being the best quote unquote diet, which I don't even like that word, the best eating pattern through research and studies and just experiences in general to have the best effects long term.
Okay. Donna Burnett, can we burn the diet industry to the ground? Are you on board there?
I am totally on board with that. I think we need, just like Dr. Russell said, give us the information. We need more of that. And then let us make great choices and help us get to the behaviors we choose to make.
All right, diet industry, we're grabbing the pitchforks. No offense, but we're coming
Burn
for
it.
You.
There you go. Yeah.
after we take our only break, I'm going to read some feedback from listeners on these various subjects. And as I mentioned, we're grateful to Donna Burnett telling her story as a mother, a wife, and a professional, and someone who says she wants to reclaim the word fat, wants to tell her own story, and has become more comfortable doing so after years of you know, frankly, what society throws at people who have obesity. So Donna is telling her story. Dr. Holly Russell is the medical director of clinical and community-based programs at the Center for Community Health and Prevention. That's at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Jill Chodak's a clinical dietitian there. Let's take that only break, and we're going to come back with some of your feedback next. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, Diane Rehm. We talk with the iconic former NPR host Diane Rehm, who has a new film airing on PBS stations this month called When My Time Comes. It's about end-of-life options for people with terminal illnesses, and it comes from a personal perspective. Her husband died of Parkinson's disease in 2014. The great Diane Rehm, Monday on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Here, first email comes from Sean. Sean says the following. Hi, Evan. Wanted to offer my experience. My father passed away in 2015 from heart failure. He was overweight, and he didn't exercise or eat well. I was at least 205 pounds. I'm 5'10". I only weighed in at doctor's visits back in 2015. My doctor mentioned my weight, but did not do it shamefully or hurtfully, just was concerned and showed it. No one else in my life ever mentioned it to me, not my girlfriend at the time, not my family, not my coworkers. I now weigh 162. I ride my bike all year. I sometimes do century rides. My blood sugar is much better than it was. It used to be in pre-diabetic range. My blood pressure is down in the normal range when it used to be high. My doctor saved my life, if you ask me. I believe it's a doctor's job to tell us the things that we may not want to hear because they care about our health. That's their job. I think we're really being too sensitive, and we want to make poor health another off-limits topic. I understand this is just my experience, and someone else's doctor might be a complete jerk when talking about weight, but I just think it's too important a topic for doctors not to bring up at all. Thank you. That's from Sean. Dr. Russell, I'll start with you. What do you think of that?
I mean, I think that alludes to the complexity, you know, of the subject. I did hear from that there were a lot of things that he changed that were related to health behaviors. And I think, you know, increasing the physical activity, his blood sugar, you know, we talked about other measurements that are possibly more evidence-based, definitely more health outcome-based than weight. And so if his blood sugar was in the pre-diabetic range or he was not physically active at all before, I guess I would argue that would be the way that I would approach it, is to address those things as opposed to necessarily the weight, because it's complicated. We don't have perfect evidence to say, like, at which weight a certain person is going to be healthy or unhealthy.
Okay. Donna, how do you see that email?
I mean, I'm really glad his doctor helped him out. It's it's very complicated, and I think that it's another testament to looking at the whole person. So looking at all the panels that Dr. Russell just managed, but also saying, what is your family history? Okay, your father just passed, and let's look at your levels and see where you are. Because, you know, from the previous show and from everything we read, you could have perfect panels and be at a weight that's higher because your muscles weigh more. You know, so it's complicated. And it's got to be individual. And I think that the other thing I heard was the doctor came from this position of caring to help the patient versus walking into a doctor's office and have them immediately, without speaking to you, just point to your weight. It's incredibly shaming. And that seems to be a completely different approach than the caller mentioned.
Jill Chodak, what did you think of the email?
I appreciated it. I love hearing all sides, and I would agree that patient-centered care, meaning each person is different and would prefer different care, is key. So some people who I see want that accountability. They say, okay, I know, I hear you, that you, you know, you don't want to know my weight, but I prefer X, Y, and Z. And so we roll with it, whereas others don't want to use the scale. So each person has a different kind of view on their weight, how they want to manage it, and if it's a factor at all. I think what's important to say to Sean, is that I'm not saying that weight is irrelevant. What I'm saying is that for a period of time, like decades, I would say, it's all we've focused on. It's literally been, hi, you're at the gynecologist, like from last week or the last show that we talked about this. You're at the gynecologist, you're hearing about your weight. You're at the dermatologist, they're weighing you. You're at the, right? All we hear is weight. And it's at the cost of other care and, frankly, at the cost of patient care is what I'm saying. And so while it sounds like he had a wonderful experience with his doctor and he made positive life changes, which is wonderful, not everybody is experiencing that. And so we're just trying, or at least I'm just trying, to shift the focus to say, yeah, weight can be a factor for some folks if they choose it and if they need to hear that affirmation. And let's not make it the whole picture.
Now, let me say to listeners, if you've emailed, please be kind. I'm just seeing in email the kind of judgment that Donna has talked about. Donna, I'm sorry what you've had to go through. In your all throughout your life. I'm sorry.
I appreciate that. I mean, it's difficult. One thing that sticks with me that I said once when walking into one of the talks with the medical residents was, I asked the residents to look around the room, and I said, "Does anybody here look like me?" And the answer is no. So it's a matter, it's very isolating, and people feel empowered to be rude, not respectful. They underestimate your worth all the time, and we can't help but internalize that as we're growing up. It's part of development, but we can do so much better as a society. We could do so much better, and it's our job to lift each other up and find each other's strengths and grow those strengths. And if we do that as a whole, it will go over to the medical space, right? So then our doctors will start seeing things that way too, and weight will be one factor. Yes, if my weight is going to I want you to think about it when you're looking at the entire portfolio of things that contribute to my health. Don't ignore it, but think about it among the many different factors. But I want you to come to me with care and to show me that I'm valuable as a whole person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I take that point. So here are two emails that are, I think, bear mentioning. Preston writes, the emailer, Sean, is making the point that his physician made the connection between his weight and some of those other evidence-based indicators that Dr. Russell mentioned. And Andrew writes, someone needs to tell your guests that their weight puts them in danger. Why is no one telling them this? I don't know that no one has said something like that, Donna. I mean, do you feel that your weight jeopardizes your future, your health?
I think that it's changed over different times in my life. So definitely my all the different levels were going in a negative direction before I had surgery. After I had surgery, they're definitely they were more in the normal range and in a much better place. Weight was lower. But the levels were what we really cared about and what Dr. Russell would bring up and measure and we would talk about in our sessions. I do think it's about lifestyle choices. So right now in COVID times, being more sedentary mm-hmm. is definitely more of a risk, and that makes weight more of a factor as well. And getting older, all of these things together. Again, it's not just the number on the scale. It's all of those things together.
What are your
Can I give an example?
Oh, yeah, yeah, please, please.
Okay. So, like, I'm hearing kind of a theme to the emails, and I just wanted to call attention to this because I think I'm resonating with what Donna just said. So, like, weight is apparent, right? So kind of, Donna, like what you said in the room, you can't unsee it, right? You're looking around. People see you there. And I'm glad they do because you're so important in our community. And let's use the example of a high LDL cholesterol, right? It's hidden. It's beneath the surface. And we know clinically that it increases your risk of heart disease, stroke, many other things. And if we could see it and people walked around with LDL cholesterol numbers written on their face, then they might see what people who have obesity experience on a daily basis. They might go to McDonald's and get some French fries and then have their mom or their friend say, oh, should you be eating those? Your LDL is high. Oh, let me remind you that you might have a heart attack today. Have you considered your LDL cholesterol? Every day. Like, I mean, it's literally every day, right? Like, Donna, it's every day. And so
every day.
And so I want to use this example because unfortunately, while we know that weight is part of the whole health equation, it happens to be the most apparent. And because of that, targeted. Whereas if you have diabetes and not extra weight, or you have high cholesterol and not extra weight, you don't have to every day deal with this stigma directly in front of you. And if a doctor chooses not to order lipids or whatever, you can go to the doctor and they might say things and not even mention your LDL cholesterol, right? Whereas with your weight, I mean, like the example with the gynecologist, they're going to say it right off the bat. And so what we're just saying is, I think, and as Donna has said, Donna knows her weight probably too much. And so we're saying, let's be kind to each other and stop bullying each other about this factor that is part of the whole health equation so that people can live happy, healthy lives in the way they choose.
Donna, what are your current health goals?
I am trying to become more active. We're working on getting our girls hiking this summer. So walking, getting outside, doing things. My health goals are really based on ability to do things. So being able to walk around campus, being able to go with my sister, my daughters and climb things. I'm pretty clumsy, so I'm not really good at that. But it's all about activity for me instead of a number on the scale. I would like to be around to see my grandchildren. And I don't believe that just looking at the number on the scale is indicative of whether I will be or not.
Okay. Dr. Russell, is that fair?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, and I think sort of circling back to the conversation that we had last time about we don't know which weight is the perfect weight for each individual person. And that is different depending on your family history, your ethnic and racial background, all of those things, you know, but we do know, we have really good evidence about, as Jill mentioned, which LDL, at what point the LDL being high is dangerous, and at what point your fasting sugar being high is dangerous. And we have really great evidence about moving your body every day. And so those things, I think, you know, I think that I also want to echo the point that Jill made about some of the comments is that, like, I think what we're talking about is the balance of harm to good here. And it's not that, again, that weight is totally unrelated to any of this, But it's just that our society's extreme fixation with weight and what is a healthy mm-hmm. weight has led to far more harm than good.
Well, here's perhaps an example. Millie emails the program to say, Evan, thanks for the program today. My daughter has struggled with her weight her entire life. As someone who struggled with anorexia as a young person, I have tried extra hard to affirm her abilities and strengths no matter what her size is. Her current doctor is fantastic, but there was a time when she had a gastrointestinal infection, and the GI specialist refused to treat her or even determine her problems, insisting that the only cure was for her to lose weight. She was only 8 years old and very active. We were never able to get her the long-term GI care that she needed because of that. What do you make of that, Dr. Russell?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's heartbreaking, and it's also very common. You know, I mean, I think we can hear story after story of that kind of thing, and the research will back that up. I mentioned this last time too, but their healthcare providers are willing to explicitly acknowledge that they have bias towards people who are heavier. And this isn't like implicit bias, like they're not aware of it. They will say it, they will admit it. I mean, that's how okay it is in our society to judge people for this particular thing as opposed to other, you know, other things that make us different. So I think it's really shamefully common. And I think that's why I guess I feel a little frustrated about the volume of responses that are, but weight is important, you know, and I think that we need to open our eyes to the harm that it does to really our obsession with that measure, that one measure.
What do you think, Jill, about that email?
Yeah, I see it every day. I will say that. I have so many stories that are stockpiled. Patients who had clinical medical problems like PCOS, endometriosis, iron deficiencies, severe fatigue, like you name it, actual clinical things that were going on with them that were missed for sometimes years because all that was focused on was weight. Oh, you're tired. Well, lose some weight. Oh, move more. Right. So like, yeah, like it, we gotta look at the whole person. And honestly, and I think going back to what Donna said, it's like meshing that inner wisdom that person has. They are the expert on their own body. You know what's going on in there. And so we got to take that and treat you as the expert of your own body and mesh it with our clinical judgment, our clinical expertise to try to find the best area to move forward for health and care. And if we just focus on weight, we're going to lose this ball game. It won't work because we're not all about our weight. There's many other pieces to us.
Mm-hmm. Donna, what did you think hearing that email?
I mean, I feel for the mother, and I feel now that I'm a mother, and I feel for the little girl who noticed it and will have that with her entire life. She'll remember that message. I remember the messages from my pediatrician saying that, and the allergist when I was 10 saying that I needed to lose weight. Why does an allergist say that? And it's only going to get, you know, at that point, the little girl has a mother advocating for her whose heart is breaking, but she's advocating. But when it comes to you to advocate for yourself in healthcare and you're shut down already by all these barriers, it gets worse and worse. So it is what it is. That is the world we live in, but we need to change it. We can change it. And I hope your listeners will hear these stories and see about the impact. And yes, weight is one factor, but one factor in that health equation. And we are worth, all of us are worth respect and dignity and care and health. And the opportunity for it. So I ask you to help us take down those barriers by just being a little bit more kind to each other and stop implying different meanings by what you see. It's not just what you see. There's so much more.
Okay, and last question I'll kick to Dr. Russell. Less than a minute here. The takeaway is not that no one should want to think about either losing weight or or maybe changing what they eat. The takeaway is that people have autonomy. People are whole people, not just their number of weight, not just what they look like, et cetera. But what would you say, Dr. Russell, in last 30 seconds here, about keeping a good balance of approach for helping people that we love with these issues?
Wow, that's a tough question for 30 seconds, Evan. But I think, you know, I think Donna's point about care and how you approach the conversation, and then also what the ultimate goals are. So what do you want to do? And if it's being able to be active, how do you get to that point? Or if it's being able to get off medicine for high blood pressure, how do you get to that point? So I think, you know, if we can flip the switch about what the goals, focusing on the health outcomes and the goals rather than a number on a scale, and also get rid of the idea that there's like one perfect norm for a body.
I'm grateful for the fact that our guests came back to really expand this conversation that needed to happen. Dr. Russell, thank you for making time for the program, and we really appreciate it.
And thank you so much for having us.
And Jill Chodak, a clinical dietitian at the Center for Community Health and Prevention. Thank you for being back with us, Jill.
Thank you.
Donna Burnett, much love to you and respect. Thank you for being with us and for telling your story.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Hope you are surrounded by love this weekend. And we will talk to you Monday on member-supported public radio.